Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Numerous states have approved medical marijuana, but not here in Texas. But what does medical research have to say about the actual use of medical marijuana? That's not clear because the federal government is standing in the way of that research. Recently, a strongly worded report from the Brookings Institute called out for the feds to get out of the way. John Hudak is a fellow in governance studies and managing editor of the Fix Gov blog for Brookings, a political think tank, policy think tank in D.C. Grace Wallach is a senior research assistant in governance studies and a fellow editor for FixGov for Brookings. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all, John and Joyce.
David, thanks for having us.
John and Grace.
Hi, David.
Hey, so John, may I ask you, we know that medical marijuana is a politically popular issue in the United States. About 80% of people support it in one way or another. So how can they support it so strongly when we don't really have all the answers about it?
Well, it's one of these challenges that I think the historical legacy of marijuana in this country has been one that the public has feared. The government has helped push that fear. And as a result of it, not only are some Americans leery about their use, its use, even though ideas and minds are changing on that issue, but at the same time, the federal government is stuck in this rut where they're seeing marijuana in the same way that they saw it in the 1930s or 1940s or 1950s. Even while states are doing very different things around policy in this area.
And Grace, how are people using medical marijuana? How could and I mean, we know they use it either off the books, on the books, legally, illegally. What do they think they're doing with it?
Yeah, so it varies a lot depending on the state, what the program allows. But medical marijuana historically has been used for palliative care and nausea treatment in cancer patients, for glaucoma and HIV and AIDS-related sort of hunger or malnourishment. And then recently, CBD oil has become available in certain states where it's legal for children with epilepsy that does not respond to other treatment. But as we talk about in the paper, a lot of the research on what strains of cannabis would be most useful, on how it interacts with other drugs, all of that kind of medical research is essentially being stalled because of federal government policies. So a lot of people are using it, but we don't necessarily know how well it's working or what other diseases it could possibly treat.
But you go online and you see all sorts of home remedies calling for used as a topical, even for arthritis. It runs the gambit. It just seems like anything goes when it comes to medical marijuana, John.
Well, that's right. And part of that, or a large part of that, is due to the fact that this research has been stalled. There are people who experiment with it, whether it's smoking it, whether it's vaporizing it, whether it's using creams or salves or administering it in some other way. Mixed in with food is another popular means of delivery. But, you know, if one person has success or finds relief and they attribute it to the use of cannabis, that appears somewhere on the internet, and stories evolve around that. And very quickly, we come to believe it's a treatment. It's a legitimate treatment for that drug. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. But that's a question that medical and pharmaceutical researchers should be answering for us. And the federal government is doing everything it can to make sure we don't have those answers. And that's, frankly, a dangerous policy world to live in.
So explain that, Grace. Why is the federal government, I mean, how are they blocking this research? How do they do that?
So at the federal level, marijuana is a Schedule I drug, which is the highest level of control at the federal level. And what that means is that, according to the U.S. government, it has no medical value. And because of that restricted status, there are a variety of sort of blockades to doing medical research. The first is that there's only one producer of medical marijuana for research licensed by the federal government through the National Institutes of Drug Abuse, and they produce a limited quantity of marijuana that's available for researchers. And then researchers have to get a separate license from the DEA. They have to go through the regular FDA approval process, and then they also have to be approved by that facility at NIDA or overseen by NIDA in order to have their study drug approved. And as a result, there are very few people who go through that process. And then even if they get through the process, there's no guarantee that the marijuana will even be available. So there's it's a very constrained process through.
Well, why can't they
government.
Just get a plane ticket to Colorado and just buy it at the corner store?
Well, they could do that. Unfortunately, that marijuana would not be considered research study marijuana under the FDA and DEA license approval. So they could do a study, but they would still technically be breaking federal law. And then it's unlikely that it would be approved by the DEA or even available for NIH funding. And it probably wouldn't get published in any reputable medical journal because it hasn't gone through the same process that we do for basically every other drug. So it wouldn't really be a study in the way we think of the term.
Right. So, and John, when you go to these, I haven't been to one, but I've read about them, these recreational marijuana stores in Colorado, they have all sorts of different types of marijuana. And they say this is going to get you a mellow and this is going to get you this way and this is going to do that. I mean, how can all this marijuana be so varied? And then you talk about medical marijuana as if it's this uniform product.
Well, that's one of the most interesting and most underappreciated aspects of marijuana. Like you said, there are so many varieties of it. There are so many different strains. Each strain is unique in a lot of ways, and it also has unique effects in terms of what that does to the body. One of the key relationships, particularly in terms of the pharmaceutical use or the medical use of cannabis, is the relationship between THC, which is the intoxicating element in cannabis, and CBD, which is a non-intoxicating element that many in the community believe holds medicinal value to it. Well, those relative percentages can vary in both directions, where you have almost no THC in a product and high levels of CBD. That's the type of medicine often used to treat children with clustered epilepsy. But then there are other strains that are higher in THC and have those intoxicating effects and can do things like stimulate appetite or have pain relief elements to it, or at least that's what patients argue. And because of it, it's not an aspirin. It's not, you know, a morphine pill. It's a very dynamic product that requires us to learn a lot more about it than we know right now.
What more do we need to know about it, John?
Well, when you think about any product that you're using for medicinal purposes, you want to know a variety of things. Most importantly, is going to be the quality of that product. What is actually in it? And we know what cannabis is, but cannabis has to be grown. It's a plant. We need to make sure that the products that are being used to grow it don't have any negative effects on the medicinal value of it. We need to know what are the right types of quantities. What types of conditions are truly treated with it and which ones is it inappropriate for? We need to know whether it interacts with other substances, with other pharmaceuticals. These are all basic questions that we know about the things that we call medicine every day, but they're things that we struggle to get a good understanding of when it comes to cannabis.
Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question about trying to take off some of these federal restrictions on the studying and research of medical marijuana, we want to hear from you. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org, and we'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Medical marijuana, 80% of Americans support it, but the federal government is standing in the way of research that could shine a stronger light, that could clear up some of the mysteries about the actual effectiveness of medical marijuana. We've got two researchers from the Brookings Institute saying the federal government needs to get out of the way. John Hudak, he's a fellow in governance studies and managing editor for the FixGov blog at Brookings, and Grace Wallach, she's a senior research assistant in governance studies and the associate editor for the FixGov blog also. And we've got some callers here. The number is 210-614-8980. Let's get Clayton on the air. Clayton, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if your guests would like to comment on do they think that there's an incentive for Big Pharma to try and keep the research on the down low or keep this stuff from competing with any of the products that they sell now? And I'll listen to my reaction off the air. Thank you.
Okay, John?
Clayton, you bring up a point that's a pretty robust point of contention in the advocacy community, and that's the idea of the impact of big pharma, or later on down the road, big marijuana growing into a real corporate entity that has pull and sway, in, not just in the market, but in government. We haven't really taken a deep dive into the relationship between pharmaceutical companies and research in this area. What I can tell you is this, however, the policies that are in place at the federal government level now, there is some historical legacy in the creation of the Controlled Substances Act and the placement of marijuana in the schedules that certainly the pharmaceutical industry had a hand in doling out. But since then, it has become such an ingrained part of American policy, American drug policy, that really it is the politicians in Washington who are not responding to the medical community, not responding to doctors, and not responding really to their own constituents, because the drug war has become such an important part of the ideas the language that politicians speak. So while I can't say that, you know, Big Pharma has had no hand in this, I don't think they're as guilty as some people would suggest.
We'll talk more about Big Pot. How would they benefit from blocking this research?
Well, I don't know exactly whether big marijuana would benefit from it, unless there was a fear that the research would tell us bad things about marijuana. And I think most people in the industry think that the research would produce good results. The concern about big marijuana is, of course, questions about how well it would be regulated, how much regulatory capture big corporate entities would have, and what that kind of impact that would have on consumers in the recreational market, in patients, in the medical market. But I think most people in the industry and in the advocacy community want to know more about this issue, and they want the federal government to get out of the way.
So Big Pot likes this big, gray, murky area that we're in now.
It depends on the issue. They certainly don't like the big gray murky area when it comes to banking or taxes. That's a big problem for them and for their bottom line. But I think if given the choice between, a solution to all of these gray areas and the status quo, they're going to pick solutions any day.
Let's go back to the phone lines with Sam. And Sam, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, good topic. I had some major shoulder surgery about a year and a half ago and came home from the hospital with, just huge amounts of Vicodin and codeine, and found out that, first of all, I was scared to death of the addiction factor, and second of all, when I took enough codeine to control the pain, I woke up the next morning literally hungover and shaking. So I took a chance, and during the summer when I was off work, ordered edible marijuana from Colorado, and one of the real great things is that the companies that manufacture this rigidly control the amount of THC, so there aren't any surprises. And I can't say that it cured my condition, but it was the first time in a year that I slept all night. And I woke up in the morning, I had no hangover. The effects lasted well through the day. I didn't feel under the influence when I woke up. So at least from my own experience as far as palliative care, it's wonderful. I'm 100% for it based on my own experience.
How did you get it, Sam?
Actually, it's readily available. There are online sites that you can – there's a thing called the Tor Network. It's illegal to buy. It's fairly easy and safe to get. And, I knew I was taking a chance doing it, but the pain was enough where I was willing to take the chance.
How'd you feel about being a criminal?
I didn't feel like I was being a criminal. I felt like it was a bad law.
Sam, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Grace, what's your reaction?
Well, I think this is an important example of why we need federal policy to really react to what's happening on the ground. Obviously, it is illegal to order marijuana from Colorado over the internet. It's only available for people who live in the state or buy it in the state. But what's important is this illustrates the example of how Sam was unable to talk to his doctor about if his pain medication was working for him, the side effects that he was having, and whether or not marijuana could offer an alternative. Unfortunately, that's a thing that a lot of people cannot talk to their doctor about if they're on Medicare or Medicaid, if they are seeing a doctor through the VA. And many doctors who just, even in private practice, who just don't know enough about it to feel comfortable recommending it. So that's really the reason that more medical research and more sensible medical marijuana laws could ameliorate this situation. So you wouldn't have to go to the internet to essentially order pain medication. You want to get that through a consultant, a consultation with your doctor.
John, the caller, Sam, said that he thought it was going to be safe and that it would be, at a consistent level. Is that an assumption that bears out?
What I will say is that the edible marijuana that's produced legally in Colorado does have titration and labeling regulations around it. So you have a very good idea of what you are getting from it, and that's critically important for the use of any product, whether it's cannabis or a pharmaceutical or whether it's milk, for that matter. What I will say, though, is procuring it across state lines over the internet introduces a disruption from legal channels. And whenever you do that, as Grace said, it is illegal to do that. Whenever you do that, I think you also run the risk of introducing other concerns into that process in the same way that you would if you were buying marijuana off a street corner. And so while I think in Colorado, if you go into a dispensary and buy marijuana through the legal and regulated processes, you have a good idea of what you're getting. You can be comfortable in that. When you use the alternative avenues, however, I would guard against the certainty of the product that you're getting.
But certainly he was pushed into a desperate action because of his situation. Let's get another caller on the air. Freya. Freya, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. And I got to hit the button. Okay, there you go.
I just wanted to mention that through both of my pregnancies, I had hyperemesis and was in and out of the emergency room due to dehydration. I did smoke to get over the nausea and also to increase my appetite. Both of my children are middle, they're teens now, and they both have straight A's and AB honor roll. I'm not worried about that. What I'm concerned about is just because it worked for me, it may not work for other people. I'm interested in finding out if there is a vote coming up in Congress or whatever, and when they might change it from a Schedule One drug. I have family members who died terrible deaths from cancer, and I'm very interested in finding out more about the research, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Great call. Thank you. So, Grace?
So there are a couple of different ways the federal government can move marijuana from the Schedule One drug. Currently, there's a bill in Congress called the CARES Act, which would move it to Schedule Two and also release some of the other restrictions on banking and medical doctors prescribing marijuana in states where it's legal. I don't think that's been scheduled for a vote yet, but it is gaining a lot of popularity in the Senate where it was introduced. So that's one avenue to watch. The other avenue is administratively through the executive branch. So President Obama has initiated or is reviewing a petition that's been given to the Attorney General to essentially go through the administrative route where the DEA and then the FDA or the FDA and then the DEA will review the available evidence on the medical use of marijuana, and then they can issue sort of a scheduling recommendation that the DEA can then accept or override. So that's another process that's ongoing concurrently to the congressional option.
Well, that would be an Obama executive order that would make news for sure. Let's get one more caller on the air. Roger. Roger, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. How are you doing, sir?
All right.
Just touching base with you. Is there an LD50 for marijuana?
What's that?
And, I mean, I know that there's plenty of people that get hooked on opiates and that sort of stuff. When is there going to be some rationality in the laws that we are saddled with here in Texas?
Okay. All right, we're short on time, so I'm going to let John start on that because that's a huge question. So, John, go ahead.
Texas is obviously a fairly conservative state, and conservative states are likely going to be the ones that are the last to embrace full-fledged medical marijuana programs in the ways that more moderate states and Western states that have more libertarian streaks in them have come to embrace. That said, support for medical marijuana is quite high in Texas. Support for recreational marijuana is actually surprisingly higher than most people would think. It's nearing 50% in recent polling. And so there's always a delay in policymakers' willingness to respond to constituents' needs. And I think if you are in favor of medical marijuana in Texas, one of the challenges that exists is that the best way to open up a policymaker's eyes is through a grassroots effort, through passion, through yelling, through letter writing, through those sorts of processes. And frankly, medical marijuana isn't at the top of everyone's to-do list.
Okay, so John Hudak, I got to let you go. John Hudak's a fellow of governance studies and managing editor of the Fix blog for Brookings. Grace Wallach is a senior research assistant and also at the Fix blog, Fix.gov Brookings as well. This is The Source.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Paul Flab and David Martin Davies. Elena Soros is our intern. Our engineer is Doug DeMore. Management and oversight provided by News Director Shelley Koffler and VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.